Is there a moment in your life that particularly stands out as being remarkable, of having great significance for you? A time that you look back to and you think, well, through that experience, through that incident, I learned great things. Or that experience changed my life forever and changed it for the better. Most of us, I'm sure, can think of things in our lives that we would say, yeah, that's fairly significant for me. And when we look at the life of Isaac, there isn't a great deal that is said about Isaac when you compare his life to the life of his father Abraham or to his son Jacob. To each of those men, numerous chapters in this book of Genesis are devoted. But to the life of Isaac, it's only chapter 26 that is entirely devoted to him. Yes, he appears in chapter 22, and he appears in chapter 25, and we'll read more of him as we go through this great book. But only chapter 26 is particularly devoted to him, and nothing of great remarkable nature is actually outlined for us in that chapter. And yet we can say that in the life of Isaac, there was a great incident that must have had a tremendous impact upon him. And perhaps you've already guessed that the incident that I'm referring to is when his father took him and intended to sacrifice him on an altar. When we think about that incident, we think most of all about the great faith of Abraham and his incredible obedience to God, that when God told him to take his own special son, Isaac, the son of promise, and take him and sacrifice him, that immediately Abraham went and proceeded on that journey to the place designated by God. And we think of the incredible faith of Abraham to be willing to do such a thing. But what about Isaac in that situation? You ever spend much time thinking about what it must have been like for him? Well, for much of the journey, it wasn't a particularly significant thing. Abraham had offered sacrifices before, and no doubt Isaac had participated in them in some way or another. And the only remarkable thing may have been the great journey that they had to go on this occasion in order to make this sacrifice. And then as they near their destination, Isaac begins to puzzle that his father has come extremely well prepared. He's even carted wood the whole distance, just in case there wasn't any when they arrived at the chosen destination. But his father hasn't brought an animal to sacrifice. Isaac asks his father, well, where is the sacrifice? And his father simply replied, well, God himself will supply it. How must Isaac have felt when his father grasped him and bound him and laid him on the wood of that altar? What thoughts must have gone through his mind at that point? He was a young man in his late teens, probably by this stage, and he would have experienced the great love of his father for him. We know Abraham was devoted to this son, whom God had promised, and whom God had given to him and his wife in their old age. And suddenly there he is, lying on an altar, bound hand and foot, and watching his father take a knife out of its sheath and raise it, ready to kill him. What must have gone through Isaac's mind at that point? What fear must have been in his heart? What confusion of mind? And then suddenly that voice comes from heaven And Abraham is told not to lay a finger on his son. And there in a thicket, a ram caught by its horns, the sacrifice provided by God. For the rest of his life, Isaac must have thought about that incident. And from it, he must have learned certain lessons. And indeed, I think one of the lessons that he must have learned was to trust in God. His father, Abraham, is known as a man of faith. And Isaac, on his return journey with his father, that 3-day journey back to their camp, must have pondered the great faith of his father Abraham, who had been willing to take him on that journey, who had been willing to trust in God, that despite this command, God would yet fulfill his promise that through Isaac, God would give to Abraham many descendants. Isaac must have pondered on the great faith of his father that would enable him to trust in God under such circumstances and to obey God, believing if it were necessary, God would raise up his son from the dead. And Isaac must have learned from that to trust in God. Seeing the faith of his father Abraham, he himself began to display great faith in God. In Genesis chapter 25, where the story of Isaac really begins, we're told there that Isaac, Abraham's son, was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as his wife. But they had no children. We're told that Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. Now, this isn't just a year after they got married. This isn't a couple of years after they've got married. It's not just 5 years that have gone by since Isaac first set his eyes upon Rebekah and fell in love with her. No, verse 26 tells us that Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah bore her twin sons. 20 years almost had gone by, and Rebekah was barren. And Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife. He knew the promises. He knew that God had promised to Abraham to bless him in Isaac. He knew that from him descendants were to come to Abraham more numerous than the stars of heaven. He knew the promises. And for 20 years he's trusted that God at some point would fulfill the promises. And unlike Abraham, who similarly had to wait upon God for the fulfillment of the promises, unlike Abraham, who eventually became impatient and listened to the advice of his wife and thought that God would give to him descendants through the maidservant of his wife, unlike Abraham, Isaac has learned to trust in God perhaps a little more, if we could say such a thing. Remember that Abraham learned gradually that God could be trusted wholeheartedly. The incident of the sacrifice, or the near sacrifice of Isaac, didn't occur at the beginning of Abraham's life. But well into his life, when he had already experienced the faithfulness of God, those lessons have been passed on to Isaac. Isaac has been taught, you can trust in God. Don't take matters into your own hands. Tr- trust in him. If you have problems, go to him. And so we see Isaac not going to Rebekah and seeing what she had to say about the situation, but going to the Lord. Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. He had learned the faith of Abraham. He had learned that God could be trusted. But something else that Isaac had learned from his father Abraham was the blessings associated with pursuing peace. The importance of pursuing peace with all men. We find that illustrated for us in the 26th chapter of Genesis. We see there Isaac's servants digging wells in the area that they have settled among the Philistines, and as soon as they strike water, the servants of the king of the region come and quarrel. They say, that water's ours. They dig another well, and they quarrel over it again. And both these wells were given names by Isaac that illustrate the frustration that he was experiencing. One was called quarreled, and the other was called enmity. But Isaac doesn't return like with like. He moves on. He starts over again somewhere else. And the Lord prospers him. And as the Lord prospers him, Abimelech, the king, becomes a little concerned about this prosperity. And he comes to him and he sort of sues for peace with him. He wants to make a treaty with him. And Isaac is perfectly willing to do that. He wants peace as well. He didn't want to argue with the servants, so he moves on. When Abimelech comes, he doesn't say, well, I have a right to dig wells wherever I want to dig them. God has given me this land. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Look how you've treated me. You've pushed me out of my dwelling place, and so on and so forth. No. He had learned to pursue peace, just like his father Abraham before him. Indeed, when you read this chapter of Genesis, you think, well, I've read all of this somewhere before. And you'd be right. Isaac is living in the days of either the son or the grandson of the Abimelech that Abraham had known. Those incidents in Abraham's life had happened some 100 years before these ones. And as was often the case in those days, the son took on the name of the father in many of the nations of the world. So this isn't the same man that we're dealing with here, but very similar incidents in the very same place that the first Abimelech had come to Abraham and sued for peace with him. In the same place, Isaac too forms a treaty of peace with this Philistine king. Isaac had learned the value of pursuing peace. He had learned that this was part of the nature of God himself. That God wanted to be at peace with men. That was the whole purpose of God's covenant with Abraham. Was that this nation that would come from Abraham would be a nation at peace with God. And through this nation, all the other nations of the earth would be blessed with the opportunity of peace with God. This is indeed a mark of the living God, that he doesn't seek warfare with his enemies, but he pursues peace with mankind. And we see that in the whole history of the world. That when sin first entered into this world, God didn't simply come and wipe it out and destroy the whole world and start anew. But he sought a way of peace with those who had rebelled against him. And the whole story of the Bible is the story of how God would bring peace to this world that is at war with him. Isaac had learned to trust in God. Isaac had learned to pursue peace with men. But there's another lesson that Isaac had learned from his father, Abraham. He had learned to be deceitful. He had learned much that was good, but he had also learned something that was bad. We're told that when he went to dwell in Gerar, the region over which Abimelech was king, that the men of the place came and asked him about his wife, Rebekah. And he said, "She's my sister." He was afraid, we're told, to say she is my wife, because he reasoned, "Lest the men of the place kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold." Well, you say, I've heard that before too. Abraham did the same thing twice. And Isaac had learned to walk in his father's footsteps. Yes, he had learned to trust in God. And yes, he had learned to pursue peace with men. But he had also learned to be deceitful. To lie. He does it in exactly the same way his father had done. Now, of course, Isaac wasn't around at the time. Those incidents happened before Isaac's birth. Nevertheless, he must have heard about them. He must have known about those episodes in the life of his father. And perhaps that is partly why he was willing to do the same thing on this occasion. Well, after all, Abraham did it. And Abraham basically got away with it. He wasn't judged in any particularly painful way as a result of it. So Isaac does the same thing. He had learned from his father good things and bad things. And in conclusion, I simply want to make three points. Isaac must have had immense respect for his father after that incident at the altar on the mountain when he almost lost his life under his father's knife. That incident must have generated in Isaac, a young, impressionable man, an immense respect for his father's faith and his father's obedience to God. And the little that we know about Isaac's life is a mirror image, almost, of the life of Abraham. He really did walk in his father's footsteps. That was a good thing. But perhaps his immense respect for his father blinded his eyes to the fact that his father had faults. And he just didn't distinguish between the good, the wonderful good in his father, and the failings in his father. Isaac needed to acknowledge those faults, those failings, as well as his father's good points. And that's the first thing I want to say in concluding this brief look at the life of Isaac, is that there are many good things in the people around us, in other Christians, in the great men of the faith throughout history and even in our own day to day. Perhaps you have someone that you look up to as a mentor. Perhaps it's your own father. your own mother. Remember that no one is perfect. Remember that we all have faults. And while it is great to respect our parents and to respect those whom God has raised up and who are walking in his ways, we must remember that every one of them fails. And we must be discerning. We need to see their faults and avoid them while seeing their good points and emulating them. 3 John verse 11 tells us, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. You see, there's a requirement there to weigh things up, to assess things. Is this a good thing or is it a bad thing? Isaac had much that was good in his father that he could imitate. His problem was that he also imitated the bad. The second thing I want to say is that not only are we to follow in the footsteps of godly parents, but others also. The Apostle Paul said to his spiritual children that they should follow his example. He qualified that, or clarified it still further, and said, as I also am a follower of Christ. So even he, in that exhortation to the Corinthians, says, follow me, but make sure it's where I'm following Christ. Even the Apostle Paul had his faults and failings. Role models are good to have. And if you don't have good role models in your parents, if your parents aren't believers, or if their faith in God is more like the faith of Lot than the faith of Abraham, then look for role models elsewhere that you can follow, that will lead you in paths of righteousness rather than in the way of sin. Role models are good, but every role model, like every father, like every mother, have their faults. And the third and final thing that I want to say is that while it is good to imitate our fathers, our mothers, in the good that they do, while it is great to have role models, heroes that we look up to, that we follow, above all, we must follow God. Ephesians 5 verse 1 reminds us that we are to be imitators of God. And in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verses 14 and following, Peter reminds us that we are to follow the Lord Jesus Christ, that we are to be children of God, that we are to imitate God as his children. He says there, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts as in your ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. And what the Apostle Peter is saying there is that we need to demonstrate that we are children of God by following in his footsteps. If you hadn't known that Isaac was the son of Abraham, you could have read about the life of Abraham and you could have read about the life of Isaac and you would have concluded, well, either Isaac was Abraham's son or he was his disciple. Their lives are so similar. the good things that they do and the bad things that they do are so similar. Isaac demonstrates by his life that he is Abraham's son. And what Peter calls us to do, and what Paul calls us to do, what the whole of Scripture calls us to do, is to demonstrate in our lives who our Father is. Indeed, we could go further and say, our lives will demonstrate who our Father is. Whether our Father is God Almighty, or whether our Father is the evil one. Who is your Father this morning? In whose footsteps are you following? And whose life are you emulating? May the Lord help each one of us to follow in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, who gave his life to make our peace with God.